back, everybody, to The Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Copyblogger Media. I'm your host, Jared Morris. We took a hiatus over the summer, but we're back and quite happy to be back. If you are a new listener, welcome. We appreciate you tuning in. And if you have been listening for a while, thank you very much for your support and for being here ready and waiting for new episodes. As longtime listeners know, our goal with each episode is to deliver a bite-sized chunk of useful advice that you can take action on as soon as you're done listening to improve your relationship with your audience and grow your online business. To kick off our return, Damian Farnworth and I are going to talk about content strategy. It will be a three-part series, and it begins with this episode, exactly where you would expect a Copyblogger series about content strategy to begin, with the audience. It seemed like it has been an eternity since we did our last episode, but it's actually only been a few months. But I'm excited to welcome Damian back as we get going here with the next season of The Lead. How you doing, Damian?
I'm doing fine. Hello, everyone. It's glad to be back. 3 months seems like a long time, and so it's exciting to get back and get back into the groove and hear you roar a few more times, Jared.
Yes, well, I'm sure that you've been studying up on your pop culture references in the downtime. Right?
That's right.
I do want to say real quick before we jump into today's topic, just how much we appreciate all the kind words and comments that we've gotten from people who listen and have been asking when the episodes are going to come back. Getting your kind words definitely has motivated us and gotten us excited to get back with it. So just want to say thank you to everybody out there for those.
Yes, thank you.
And with that said, let's get started. So we're doing a three-part series here on content strategy, and this is the first part of that series. And if you follow Copyblogger, it won't surprise you that the first element of our content strategy series is going to cover knowing your audience. And not just knowing your audience from a statistical or a demographic level, but knowing your audience intimately, knowing what they stand for, what they live for. In other words, understanding their worldviews. And Damon, you wrote a great article about this a few months ago that will certainly be linked in the show notes. And I want to break apart some of the ideas that you talk about in that article. And so let's just start with that big picture. What is a worldview? And also, how is a worldview different from a persona?
Okay, yeah. So great question. Great way to start. So worldview is it's basically a descriptive model of the world, of how you see the world, and it answers some pretty basic questions like, you know, what should we do next? What is true and false? How should we attain our goals? You know, in a worldview, there's a philosopher named James Sire. He wrote a book a number of years ago called The Universe Next Door, which is a quote from an E.E. Cummings poem. But in The Universe Next Door, he identifies seven basic ideas behind, seven basic worldviews. And these are typically like deism or naturalism.
Existentialism?
Yes, that one. I don't know. Okay, so that one, New Age, postmodern. And these are the things that people, you know, they don't develop these sort of ideas about their world systematically. It's not like you sit down and say, I want to be, you know, a postmodern existentialist, you know. Rather, it's something that develops within us through, you know, how we're raised and the household that we're raised. So it's influenced by our friends, by our education, our experiences. You know, it could be influenced by a book that you read as a youngster. You know, and the thing to remember too, that worldviews are, they develop in one direction and they become very difficult to change as you get older. So the thing to remember as an advertiser is that you're not after trying to change somebody's worldview. You're after simply trying to get in alignment with their worldview, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So, for example, right, like me personally, I have a worldview that communication, the most important part of communication is being audience focused, right? Focusing on the mm-hmm. person that you're talking to. And that has developed because of sales training I received in my first job after college and reading Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, and joining Copyblogger and learning that training. So when you talk about how that systematically developed, is that what you mean? That I've kind of, you know, developed that worldview and now it's much more stringent in my mind, harder to change, but if someone is trying to tap into me or sell to me or communicate to me, they need to understand that and communicate to that part of me.
Right. Yeah. So like what you described, that's atypical. Most people, you know, when they learn that they have a worldview to even begin with, because I would probably say most people don't even realize they have a worldview until they come across this idea of worldview. Then they realize that, oh, this is how I think and not everyone else thinks that way. Right. Mm-hmm. What you've done, is that you've identified this. This is important to me. And so I'm going to pursue this path. Your worldview is not so much communication, but it's the importance of people. You put an emphasis on people. So you're actually, what's above the communication part is this idea of how you feel, how you view how the world works, right? The world is not a world of competition, but it's one of cooperation where you have to get along with people. And the best way to get along with people, right, is to communicate clearly with them, to listen to them, to understand what they need to hear from you. So all that is created through a worldview. For instance, right, so Stephen Covey, have you read Stephen Covey's book, Seven Habits?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and in that, he has that view of, of try to understand first before you communicate. A lot of this is people-centric. Well, so he has a certain world view that he views, and that's why he wouldn't come up with these sort of habits. You wouldn't see that world. Machiavelli, right, who wrote the book The Prince, which was, satirical in some sense, a social criticism, but he had a different worldview. He saw the world as one of competition. Of course, he was dealing in the world of politics, but that was completely different. So, in that sense, it's like, so as an advertiser, as someone who's trying to, resonate with you, understanding how you view and how you think is important. It's part of the process of coming up and discovering what your worldview is. Because really, again, it's going above and beyond just the fact that communication is important to you. So why is communication important to you? How do you, that really comes down to point, when we emphasize the point that like communication is important to you because you realize cooperation is good and you realize people are good. It's nice to be, have community. But so why is that? Well, it's because you view human beings as being decent people who, deserve certain, deserve certain rights. So you want to be able to deliver that and you want to help people and to inspire people. And that's all built around your worldview.
So how would you contrast that then with personas?
Okay, so a persona is another tool, and really, like I mentioned in the article, a persona helps you figure out things like the buying behaviors of your. Why do they shop at high end versus a Walmart? Why do they? What are the certain attitudes that they have about shopping? What are the certain attitudes they have about politics? A persona sort of helps you fill out demographics, psychographics of a particular your particular audience. What the worldview does is tell you why they believe that. It's useful information both ways, and this kind of I think what happens at this stage here is people, I've kind of heard this, as I was moving through these three different articles, and we're talking about worldview, then we're talking about empathy map, and we're talking about storytelling, and some of the complaints were, well, that just seems like a lot you're throwing, onto people. First you tell me worldview, now it's personas. What else am I going to have to do? Well, the point being is that you should be doing all of it. You don't have to do it all at once, but you should be developing personas. If you develop the worldview, you're going to develop part of the personas. If you develop a persona, you're going to develop part of you're going to be keying in, and you're going to know what kind of questions to ask when you're developing the worldview. So you might just say, hey, let's focus on a persona right now. Then you create the persona. Then you work from that with your marketing for a period of time. Then you say, okay, when you tweak and change the persona based upon your experiment and experiments, and then you then turn towards the worldview. So let's explore what is their worldview, and then you figure that out, and then you go and run your marketing for a few months, a few years, and then you stop again. And so you create, you might create an empathy map at that point. So all of this, the goal is, and like you said at the beginning, to understanding your audience, and this is all. You as an advertiser should have a growing knowledge base of who your customer is. It's just like it's just like a marriage. It's like you constantly figuring out who that person is so you can have a great relationship with them. The same thing with your audience and using personas and using worldviews.
So should people be sitting down, let's say they're going to start a site or start a business, should they be sitting down and trying to define these worldviews in the beginning? Is the better process to get some kind of data like the demographic information you were talking about earlier, getting that and then saying why, and then saying why, you know, and continuing to try and dig the why? What's the process? When should this start, and is there a correct order that it needs to go in?
I wouldn't say there's a correct order. I think it's helpful. You know, for me, it depends on your personality really too. I think for me, it's always been kind of, I know what I just to say it. So if you want to start a blog, you have an idea and you have a direction you want to go. And then of course you could sit down and think of, okay, so who is going to be my audience? Well, you probably have a hunch and you could write that hunch down and you can maybe sort of script out, you know, sort of nebulous kind of idea of who your audience is, and then go and start writing a couple of posts, start building the audience and seeing how your interaction with the community is changing the way your view of the audience is, because it will change. I mean, every you know successful marketer and advertiser understands that is, like, they think they know their audience until they actually interact with them and then they realize that they're asking certain things, they're looking for certain things, and they want certain things. So it's really kind of a trial and error process, like, you know, like the scientific method really. It's just you have a hunch, you go out there and test the hunch. How does your hunch stand up to reality? If it's completely blown out of the water, then you re-engineer the way you think about your audience based upon reality, and then you continue more. And then, so say you've run this blog for several months, and then you could sit down, and once you have that audience, because here's the thing you can't have, right? You can't do a worldview without having the audience first, because it's part of the process of getting that worldview, right, is you know, some, like doing like conducting one-on-one interviews. If you don't have an audience, you can't do the interviews, you know, or reading the comments on your blog. You can, if you have a hunch of who your audience is, you can go and, you know, study Amazon reviews. But certainly, you know, once you have an audience, you can create a survey and, you know, with Google Docs or SurveyMonkey and ask them specific, you know, sort of, you know, the worldview questions, the ones that, like, you know, I gave you a list in that article. You can create a survey and ask those questions in that once you have that audience. Even if you only have 100 people, you know, and if you get, you know, 15 to 20 people to respond, you're going on something, you know, and you can tweak and base upon that. Of course, you can eavesdrop on real life conversations, or if you actually have a business and with customer support, you can analyze your support mails or review your testimonials. But, you know, in essence, it's monitoring your audience on the social web and across forums.
Well, and here's kind of a real world example for that, because I was thinking about this as we were prepping for today's episode, is kind of how Primality.com has evolved over the past few months, right? My side project. You know, so when I started that, I always had an idea for the content, right? Studying, you know, how balancing pride and humility can help you in your life. And right. I had an idea of who might read that and who might be attracted to that. But over the course of the last 3-4 months, as you said, from comments and from emails and from conversations, that understanding of the audience has really evolved. So I jotted down a few notes here. And I just want to I kind of did this just as practice. Like, let me try and define the worldview of a Primality reader real quick.
That's great.
And you tell me if this is what a worldview is, if it isn't digging deep enough, whatever. But here's just a few of the notes that I jotted down. So Primality readers believe they are capable of achieving more tomorrow than they did today. And they believe that the key factor that will allow them to do this is their own mentality and attitude. In other words, they take personal responsibility and accountability for everything that happens to them. So they are always seeking methods of self-improvement to give them that marginal improvement from one day to the next, building a better life in this way brick by brick. They also believe that success means more and tastes sweeter when it involves lifting other people up, not just themselves. So is that a worldview, or is that not go deep enough?
No, that's perfect. Yeah, you know, that's absolutely perfect, because some of the things that you said within there, for example, like taking responsibility for their actions and realizing that their success is sort of on their shoulders, involves a worldview that that emphasizes individuality, but it also emphasizes, you know, hard work, and it emphasizes
that there's opportunity out in the world, that anybody can succeed, which in contrast, you know, some people have this sort of, you know, those people who might have a victim mentality would have almost the opposite sort of mentality, like everything, like a fatalistic, you know, mentality. I can never do anything. You know, why resist the world and the bad luck that always comes up on me? So yeah, that's perfect.
So what as we kind of wrap up this first episode, man, the time goes quick. I forgot how fast the time goes when we do these.
Yeah.
So what is one takeaway? Again, obviously, this is part of a three-part series. We're going to talk about empathy and building empathy maps and storytelling. So what is one action item that you think people can take away here in terms of worldview that can help them as soon as tomorrow communicate better with their audiences?
Well, I think that to do just what you did with your audience, you know, is to sit down and to think about, okay, what do I know about my audience, and create, you know, pull in the resources if you have them to help them sort of, you know, write that out. If they don't have an audience, but they just have an idea, you know, sort of think through who the ideal person you're trying to communicate with is. So the takeaway for that, yes, is to sit down, do that same exercise that you did. How long did it take you to do that?
I mean, that obviously the research went over the course of 3 or 4 sure. months, but it took me, I don't know, a few minutes. I just kind of free flow writing. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. So if you've been doing this for years, then again, you probably have it in your mind, but you've just never sat down and sort of, you know, codified it in that sense. So, but yet for you, a couple of months, it's taken, like you said, you learn your audience. And then once you sit down, if you don't have that, you know, sit down and so forecast what is an audience. What do you want your audience to look like? That may change as you watch the people who gravitate, because it's, again, it's, you know, you could be presenting ideas and attract an entirely different crowd, and you have to be okay with that, because you're going down the path you want to go, you know, go along. Are you, you know, is the audience the right people you want to attract? Is that who you're trying to do? And so you just develop. But through that experience, you know, you come to realize who your audience is, and that view of who you thought they were will obviously change. You have to be okay with that, though, too. And you might even be surprised by who your audience is. But again, you're not after trying to change that worldview. You're actually just trying to tap into it.
Okay, one more quick follow-up to that. So obviously, this was in my head, right? I obviously mm-hmm. had an understanding of this. Why is it important to write it down then? I mean, if I already kind of know it and I'm gaining this knowledge over the course of time, why is it so important to codify it, to write it out?
I think so it helps you just to focus, because it just for me, you know, I think having it out on paper helps you to kind of focus and center all your energy on that thought, to say, this is it, this is what it is. If you never do that, I mean, you're not going to lose or anything like that. But I think it's helpful just to, you know, as an exercise of like, who is my audience? And it's an exercise too, in the sense of like, what kind of content, what kind of product can I create for them? If you sit down and you write that out, and you know, that's probably a monster 2 or 3 paragraphs, you might be full of different ideas and directions in which you can go with content or products. So,
all right. Well, perfect. Well, Damien, awesome to get back on the horse here with the lead, and looking forward to doing the rest of the series and then the many exciting episodes that we have planned beyond that.
Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it, Jared.
All righty. Talk to you soon, man.
Hey, buddy. Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Lead. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving the show a rating or a review on iTunes, or pass it along to a friend or colleague. We'd greatly appreciate it. And if you want to dig deeper on the topics that Damien and I discussed in this episode and that we will discuss in the future, I highly recommend that you go sign up for Brian Clark's free New Rainmaker training course. It is a 2-week course sent to you via email that includes 7 lessons and 3 webinars. Now, at some point, this won't be offered for free anymore, so it would behoove you to head over to newrainmaker.com/register as soon as you can to get your hands on this valuable free education series that shows you step by step how to move beyond marketing and embrace the power that comes from building a true audience asset. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another episode of The Lead. Until then, keep learning and keep putting your audience first. Talk to you soon, everybody.
So I wish I was a slave to an age-old trade. have mercy on my rough and